This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, New Orleans. There is so much news going on both here domestically as well as internationally overseas. The president is overseas at the present time. A lot of different issues with NATO. Obviously, his next visit with Prime Minister May and a number of the issues that they have going on in England as well. And joining us on the line at this time to talk about that is Daniel Kochus, who's the policy analyst in European affairs in the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at Heritage Foundation. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me on today.
So we look at a lot of the same issues that we have here and keeping it under the umbrella of this Make America Great Again that Trump has talked about. It seems as though a lot of those same issues are appearing at the UK as it relates to Brexit and their exit from the EU, and it seems to be creating a lot of disruption overseas.
That's right. So I think some of the, you know, similar forces are at play, both in Europe and in the United States. So one of them is the migration issue. So clearly, immigration is a big issue in the United States. The idea that our borders are unprotected, that we can't be a true nation state without having actual borders, and you know, people who are citizens and those who are not, and sort of the differences that entails. The same conversation is going on in Europe. So on the continent proper, it's around the migration crisis, which, of course, is very expansive and continues to have ripple effects. And then in the UK, this is an issue that extends to both Eastern Europeans who have migrated in large numbers to the UK and are working low-level service jobs usually, and so sort of some of the pushback on certain areas of the UK. On this migration, and then, of course, the larger migration from places like the Middle East, North Africa, and some of the terrorism issues there. There, of course, was a huge scandal recently in the United the UK over the last year around a group of Pakistani immigrants who were grooming young girls for sex trafficking and whatnot. So there are a lot of issues on the immigration front that are at play there, similar to the United States. And then I would also say the other broader overarching issue is this idea, and one that the Trump administration has really championed, of sovereignty. So the idea that as a free democratic country that we should have say over our own laws. And it's similar in the United Kingdom, that they want to take back control over their own laws, their own judiciary, so not have the EU be able to override acts of parliament or that of the High Court.
So for the benefit of our listening audience, the UK didn't adopt all of the EU policies. So, for example, they still have their own British pounds as their currency there as opposed to the EU. And there are a number of other provisions that they kind of opted out. So they kind of had more of a bastardized membership as opposed to a full membership like some of the other countries in Europe.
That's correct. So they had some opt-outs, and the one of the key ones, of course, was on the currency issue. So they did have some flexibility. They had a different arrangement, somewhat different arrangement, some of the other countries in Europe regarding migration to the UK. But still, you know, they adopted a huge amount of EU laws, regulations, especially in the trade arena. And so this was costing British businesses quite a bit of money. And one of the things it does in particular is that it really disadvantages small and medium-sized businesses. So when you think about the EU, it's a giant bureaucracy that puts out reams of paper, much like our own bureaucracy, just puts out reams of paper and regulations. And the companies that are best equipped to handle that are these large multinationals that can hire teams of attorneys and accountants to actually go through and sort of make sure that they're hitting all of these different regulatory benchmarks and paperwork that they need to file and whatnot. So it's much harder for small companies and medium-sized companies to actually keep up with that sort of bureaucratic burden. And so I think in particular, it really stifles innovation. And so that's something that I think the UK was quite concerned about. And then you also have the issue of, I think, courts. So in the United States, the Supreme Court is the top arbiter of U.S. law. And so I think you have some, legal scholars on the left who would like to see sort of the United States Supreme Court look to, you know, international jurisdictions and international law for inferring what the United States law, should be. And so, the U.S., I think for conservatives, we really want to see, the Constitution faithfully applied and what that says. It's similar in the U.K. So you had, the European Court of Justice and the Court of Human Rights and these sorts of things that could come in and make a decision, and that decision would have to then be transposed into the U.K., and it could overrule, say, a decision of the highest court in the U.K. So that was a big concern as well, and I think hopefully something that eventually the U.K. will see itself out of.
Yeah, so it seems as though the May administration is kind of trying to keep hold of some of the provisions of the EU while at the same time trying to satisfy the majority of the folks who voted in favor of exiting the EU. It seems to be very much a slippery slope for them.
It is. The prime minister is trying to walk a pretty fine line. If you recall, Theresa May was a Remain supporter before she became prime minister when she was home secretary under the Cameron prime ministership. So, her I think instincts have always been towards keeping some sort of closer relationship with the EU. And so that's really what she's chosen to do, is they're opening gambit to the EU. So they were coming up with this plan. What is our opening position going to be? And it's something of a Brexit light. So we're going to, stay in certain EU structures, specifically around trade and agriculture and services, and this and keep their regulations in the UK. And there were a few other areas where it really, in many ways, it kept the same structures that they currently have now, except now you don't have, they're still paying into the system, for instance, but you don't have that that vote anymore, because now you're no longer a voting member. So in some ways, you're actually in a worse position. And so what you saw is many of the more conservative members of her administration revolt over this. So you had David Davis, who was the Brexit secretary. You had Boris Johnson resign, and a few others resign over what they really see as a betrayal of the voters in the UK. This isn't what they voted for. And so I think that this continues to play out. Just today, there was four new amendments put forth on the government's plan regarding, their negotiating position. And so this was an opportunity for, I think, the more conservative Brexit elements to try to push back on the prime minister's plan. But a lot remains up in the air, and it's a very, very interesting and fluid situation.
What I found really interesting was how the mirror image of a number of the immigration issues that we're having and debating in this country today are the same issues, asylum being one big issue in the EU, and obviously Greece and Italy and others, because there's a rule there that the first country of origin that you land on, that's where you ultimately go back to if you get refused asylum in any of the member EU countries. They seem to be balking at that because of the North African migration. Mm-hmm. And then England is obviously, UK's balking, balking at it as well, as you pointed out, from the Eastern European bloc countries, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, and others, that ends up being their first port of entry. And they're not able to really move folks out when the asylum is rejected and or denied.
Right. So in the UK, you have the issue of sort of the free movement of persons, and so people coming from Eastern Europe into the UK, and some of the pushback among certain sectors of the population. And then you also have this sort of larger migration issue. So I think the UK is very keen not to get more caught up in sort of the problems on the continent. Of course, we've seen, unfortunately, a number of terror attacks in England recently over the past few years. And so now you have, for instance, in Calais across the channel, England is actually building a border around the main highway that trucks use to get into the Channel Tunnel to get over to the UK, because Migrants will say, you know, try to put refuse on the roadway so that trucks have to stop, and then they can jump on the trucks and get into the UK. So this is England is actually, English taxpayers are actually paying to construct a wall in France to protect some of the trucks, from basically being, attacked on their way into the UK as people try to get there. So, and I think you also have, a lot of British people feel that somehow, they're losing their culture, they're losing their country. They see what's happened in places like Germany and Sweden, where crime has increased. There's sort of this constant threat, say in France, of terrorism. It seems to be unfortunately a weekly occurrence there. And it's not what they want for their own country, and they want to have control over their own borders and a say over who actually gets to come there. And so that was a huge part, in my opinion, the number one part of why the British people voted to leave the European Union, control over their own borders and control over their own destiny.
And there seems to be a reluctance in the EU to actually deal with that particular issue. I know Angela Merkel has been under a huge amount of pressure in Germany as well, and no one seems to be able to find common ground or some resolution to these challenges.
That's exactly right. There are two reasons for that. One is just that it's an extremely difficult, complex issue. So when you have people coming across in rafts or with traffickers, and what do you do with people that you rescue from the middle of the Mediterranean? And then you have some of these, the legal rules. You'd have the southern countries like Spain and Italy saying, well, this isn't fair because everybody obviously is coming here first. And, so then what they do half the time is they don't actually register people. They just let them pass through. And then so they're not actually registered in the first country they do. So it's a very complex, difficult issue. The second problem is that people within, countries in Europe have competing interests.
Right.
So you have Italy and Germany and some of these countries that have taken a lot of migrants wanting to force countries like Poland and Hungary and these sorts of Eastern European countries to take in the mandatory, say quota. And then you have those countries which are pushing back and saying, well, we didn't create this problem. We don't want this this to be exported to our countries, and they're pushing back saying there's absolutely no way. So you have completely competing interests, and then even within countries that, even within Germany and Italy, for instance, which agree on sort of this idea they want to relocate migrants elsewhere, you have differences over what we just talked about, heading back to the country where you first claimed asylum. So there's differences of agreement on that. So I'm very skeptical that Europe is going to get a handle on this. They've tried to do, they made some steps recently to a plan to set up, say, certain centers both in North Africa as well as in Europe to process asylum claims. So we'll see whether or not those get set up and how they function. But I think this is going to continue to be a huge problem in Europe, and I think it's very varied opinions on how to deal with it, and I don't think it's going to get fixed anytime soon.
Absolutely. Daniel Kochis, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your insight into this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Have a great week. We'll be right back. We want to hear from you. 260-1870. Kind of interesting. Same issues there, same issues here, same arguments, same challenge trying to find solution. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.